One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is Leslie Kane, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and joining me from a dark room, I have Dan for a little breakdown. Dan, how are we?
The dark room is for ambience.
It is. And if you're on audio, it will mean nothing. So welcome. And if you're on video, welcome.
Just close your eyes. That's how dark the room is.
Pretty much it, yeah. If he leans back too far, he kind of disappears. Breakdown, Dan, with a lot of listener questions to get through for this one, which we'll touch on a few newsy points as well. But I think the big talking point is the trailer for James Fox's upcoming documentary. The Programme finally dropped the other day, so we're going to have a chat through some of the elements of that that were interesting, what we can expect from that, kind of your expectations, a few listener questions on that, and then get through a load more questions too. So thanks to everyone who sent stuff in. I had a few people email me to ask how they can submit questions. The easiest way is don't Instagram me, don't Patreon post it, don't DM me on X. Honestly, if you just email me, ufouapam@gmail.com, and just put listener question in the subject, it's the most incredibly easy way that I don't find your question 3 months later that you sent me back when you did. So yeah, thank you to everyone who sent stuff in, and please email if you want them read out. But there's loads to get through, Dan. But yeah, James Fox, The Programme, coming soon, which will delight the Discord chat. For all those out there who enjoy a coming soon, yep, there is a soonening, but I think it is pretty soon on the horizon. It's ready. There's no distributor yet. That's probably, I think, the best place to kick off with that chat. It's not got a Netflix or an Amazon Prime or an independent distribution. Those talks seem to be still ongoing from James's end. He's trying to keep people up to date as much as he can online. But right now, it's a case that it might come out. I would love to see it, Dan, on a big streaming platform. One, James gets paid for that, which is great because he's been shafted so many times with other documentaries, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And he deserves it for the work he puts into these things. But also it gets a bigger and bigger audience as well. But yeah, no distributor yet. Thoughts?
Well, before I carry on, I just want to say heart goes out to people in North Carolina right now. If you're in Florida, batten those hatches and stay safe. We'll pop a link down below where people can donate to kind of help the rescue efforts and recovery efforts and things like that. But it's been really lovely seeing everybody bandied together and help each other. The internet brings out the worst in people. Disaster seems to bring out the best in people very often. So stay safe. You know, Micah Hanks, Nathan, he's been on a few times. a lot of friends of the show have been there. So yeah, my heart goes out to them, and just donate if you can. Every little helps. But yeah, I would love to see it on, like, imagine logging into Netflix and just seeing the big banner at the top there.
Yeah.
We always talk about Stephen Greer's work and how that's kind of had a few road bumps, but James Fox seems to keep the bar really high, especially, you know, with his not the phenomenon. I was going to say last movie then, but his last movie was Moment of Contact, right? So yeah, it'd be wonderful to see his name up there and for it to reach as big an audience as possible. This is the point of the work he's doing, is to seemingly catch everyone up, bring everyone kind of on the same playing field, and just so they know what's going on. And yeah, there was quite a bit in the new trailer, right?
Yes. What were you expecting from the trailer before it came out?
I was expecting the smooth, deep tones of Peter Coyote, which I got. I was happy to see that. But also, I expected to see a whole bunch of kind of new whistleblowers, which we didn't necessarily get. I'm sure we'll go into it in a second, like what we did see. But there were one or two, and I've always got to remember with these things that it's not for us, right? Like, if you're following this every single day, every single week, you're going to know probably most of what's in this documentary. But the people that the phenomena really struck a chord with, the people that aren't in this every day, the casuals, so to speak, or the people that maybe saw Lou on The Daily Show and is like, what's next? I want to know more. Those people are going to see a lot of heavy hitters kind of saying some big statements.
So I wonder, and I've literally had to write this down so I don't forget, but I'll get to it now. There's no release date for it yet, and you mentioned whistleblowers, and I think one of the things people have been hoping for or expecting is we're going to have this, you know, landslide of whistleblowers coming out and speaking with James Fox. Excuse the little fly that's just gone across my...
A fly? That's an orb. It's going to, in the YouTube comments, you're going to see it. Orb attacking Andy.
Instagram with 500,000 views in an hour. but is there an element that anyone James does have who may be attached to the upcoming hearings in November, then James can't release his documentary till after those dates because reasons? Would that make sense that they might have said, I'll come on, but you can't have this? Or maybe given some of the connections he has to senators and congressmen and women, and maybe there's been an agreement that these people will speak to you? Because I know, like, Tim Burchett and Luna and whatnot have said recently that they don't want to bring the witnesses out now and announce them.
Yeah, that's right.
Essentially scared. I think that's a perfectly sensible thing to do as well, by the way. There's no point in announcing a load of names ahead of time for people to get excited about or talk about, or, you know, as much as that would be great for us, like, keep them till the hearing and they can come out and do their thing, and then whatever happens after happens. And we'll get to talk about the Jason Sands stuff and why that's probably relevant, but maybe something in the fact that there may be folks in the documentary that will testify, and it's best that they do that first.
Yeah, quite possibly a kind of gentleman's agreement. And to be honest, it's probably going to make James's film more impactful if people can watch the hearings and then, you know, Google the name and up they pop in James's new film where they talk a little more extensively and openly. I know the guy I'm staying with now, he's not interested in the subject at all, but he watched those hearings and he knows Fravor and Graves. Worst time ever to forget the other person that was there. Who am I forgetting?
Grush,
the big one.
Wow.
Of course.
I thought you were joking. I was like, yeah,
happy Monday, everyone. Monday brain. And I've had my COVID booster today, so don't come at me. But yeah, he knows those names and they made a big impact. So it would make sense from a marketing perspective to maybe spin it off the back of those hearings there. So that James reaches, again, as many people as possible. Also, we saw last time, we've seen it a few times now, actually, where certain people have come forward, like Sarah Gamm. I know Tim Gallaudet. Is that how we say it?
Just Tim Gallaudet, not Tim, but yeah.
Tim Gallaudet. Where certain journalists have glommed on to certain facets of his life outside the UFO subject and attacked him over them and tried to kind of belittle the import that he brings to this, when really, yeah, it's kind of by the by. You know, if yep. You have these people in such powerful positions where they're commanding, you know, whole fleets and things like that. I don't care if in your home life you go see a medium or something for personal reasons. It should still have the impact, and it's not fair to attack someone on that. Fair to bring it to light, I guess, but, you know, to attack someone, eh. So I can see why those names are kind of being held back for now and until they walk onto the floor.
Similar to Bob Lazar being a pimp is an issue for a lot of folks, Dan, but, you know, he could still have worked on an alien spacecraft.
Like me, put my hand up. Yep. Yeah, no, exactly. It just gives people an easy out. And I always say when I talk about this, you know, that's my bias now. And I try and be aware of that. But I'm trying to balance it as I still receive more info and read more and hear more from Bob's side of the story. Whereas many people will just switch off and they wouldn't kind of carry on listening. I can totally see why they would keep those names back.
It's funny, you mentioned obviously Fravor and Graves. So you get Dave Fravor, Ryan Graves, the pilots who testified.
And Grush.
alongside, David Grush. Grush was the newer of the three at the time. And when I was speaking to Nick Gold last week, I don't know if you've bothered or had a chance to listen, Dan, but I mentioned regarding that hearing that Fravor and Graves, for me, could have not been there and it would have still had the same impact globally, because Grush made all the big statements and stuff, and Nick very fairly, and I retracted what I said, because Nick was like, no, you don't realize how important it was that they were there for the congressmen and women, the senators, the journalists, you know, the folks in politics and the military who aren't into this subject, and what that meant, not even necessarily to the public who didn't know the story, but just for the kind of gravitas of their positions. And I was actually, I am speaking from a UAP geek, I think, as we called it, point of view at the time, where we know that story, we know their stuff, so I'm just hearing them say the same things, but that's not for me. And I was like, yeah, do you know what? Totally fair, because that's very, very poignant. They were there, and it was like, just because I knew what was happening doesn't mean, you know, other people shouldn't hear that story and it's not completely relevant. And that might be something to bring it back to the programme. There will be things, like you say, within this, Dan, that we know that the UFO community, depending on how well researched or how well informed you are or what you've heard, you will see bits of stuff that you know. I do get the feeling, and this is one of the questions that comes up in a little while from listeners, so we won't go too much into it, but there will be some new stuff in here for us. That's a definite on my part. Leslie Kane talks about the hearings. That's one of the first thing. Grush's comments are going to be a big part of it. A lot of the representatives asking the questions to Grush, you know, did we have bodies? Did we have craft? That's all a big thing. And I think if you're a member of the public seeing and hearing that, that's going to prick your ears up, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. There's one, I rewatched the trailer just before we jumped on here, and there's one that just tickles me when, I can't remember who it is, maybe it's Nancy Mace, asks if we managed to get the bodies of the pilots who piloted this craft, and just the repeat of the word pilot tickles me there, because you're piloting, that's a pilot. But one of the massive impacts for me right there, and I guess I can pull another little bit of news into it, was where AOC, Alexandra, I always mess her name up, Cortez.
Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, that's right. She asked Grush during the hearings about IRADs, IRNDs. Basically, these are, there are so many different acronyms in this. They're basically independent research and development programs. It's a way that the government can give money to research without being directly connected. So a little bit of plausible deniability, but also Grush directly said that this is what was being done to fund UAP programs, that funds were being misappropriated in that way. And
see, for an example there, from a complete layman like myself, I'm thinking then that a private contractor or a subset in the government could say, we think that the Chinese have this new uranium rod that when it's heated a certain way allows them to propel drones, you know, an extra, you know, 150%, and we want to study this, and they can go, okay, so what we'll do is give this little funny named organization that money, and they go and study that, and the government don't have to say, yeah, we're studying Chinese advanced propulsion.
Yeah, exactly, that's precisely it. There's just a level of removed from it. And this past week or so, Douglas Dean Johnson, who I'm sure we'll talk about it in another kind of area today, he found that Battelle Memorial Institute, BMI, as they're called. They were involved in UFO studies way back in the 50s, you know, before they even had floppy disks. It was when you had the punch cards and you put them in machines. They're kind of involved in the decades of study that this has been going on, and kind of people, you know, squint their eyes at them and wonder, what did you find out? What are you keeping from us? And Douglas T. Johnson actually found out that they're currently lobbying against part of the legislation, the UAP legislation that's going through this year. Last year, something was passed that basically said you're not allowed to use funds for studying anything to do with UAP. That's expiring this year, so they need to renew it. And it seems that renewal is being lobbied against by a company that lobbies politicians on behalf of Battelle Memorial Institute. And just to speak to exactly what you were just saying a second ago about the rods, it seems to be they have an issue and want to add exceptions to the law for development of microelectronics and device cyber protection. So something there is kind of thought to maybe have a legacy from a downed UFO or something like that. Microelectronics obviously is a simple one. Device cyber protection, there's something interesting. I saw that someone dragged up that they were being funded for quantum computers. And cyber site, was that you buzzing?
No, it was my phone, but thank you.
Oh, was you? Excuse you. So they're being funded for quantum computer systems, which is interesting because that's, you know, the frontier of computers right now. And Travis Taylor and Jay Stratton. Travis Taylor was the UAPTF chief scientist. Jay Stratton was the guy that was running with UAPTF in the official manner and kind of making inroads into organizations and things like that, making them take it seriously. They've both been involved in a company called ID Quantique, which is to do with quantum stuffs. And I say stuffs because it's not really clear on their website. So it seems that there's a whole host of really interesting possible implications around this. And these companies all said, no, we're not studying this stuff. Grush is lying. And now they're lobbying against it, saying that what they're not studying is something they're concerned about not being able to study.
I think I've thrown the format out the window at this point. So,
yeah, sorry, I like Inception that one in there.
No. Travis Taylor stuff, I saw a clip online earlier today where he's at one of these, I think, like Phenomicon type conferences, you know, whatever it is. And he's talking about alien species potentially using
cow blood.
Yeah, cow blood to propel.
I saw this.
And yeah. I was like,
have you seen Duels where they use cat blood in the UFOs?
No.
It reminded me of that.
I'm just like, he's such an interesting character, isn't he? Because in so many ways, he literally is a character on the TV show. But he was also quite involved in a lot of stuff. And he also does have a pretty decorated CV. Yep. So it's like, it's really easy to dismiss some of the things he says or the way he comes across as being, he's playing to the cameras. It's just sensational stuff for TV. But then other things point to the fact, no, this guy's really intelligent. And again, is it what we said though before about Lazar and just there are elements of his personality or his past life that play to that? You said Tim Gallaudet. And I'm not necessarily directly comparing these people, but sure, there are just elements of personal and private lives that, or opinions that can throw off everything. And maybe that's a bad way to look at it, isn't it? Because that shouldn't be the case. Travis Taylor, where are you at with Travis?
Interesting guy. I know he's written a whole bunch of sci-fi, and I'm big on kind of reading sci-fi or, you know, watching it because it just lets you play with what ifs and different ideas. And so I'm really curious what ifs Travis Taylor is playing with in his sci-fi books. Because like you said, yeah, he's really decorated. This guy is really accomplished and he's a really smart dude and just really intelligent. So, yeah, I'd love to have a beer with the guy and just, you know, shoot the shit, as it were, and just see where his mind goes. Because these people don't always, you know, saying, for example, cow blood powered UFOs. That sounds silly. It sounds as silly as saying, you know, there's a werewolf at the end of the garden. But there are ways of talking about these things. You know, with the werewolf thing, if Colm Kelleher has said, there seemed to be a bipedal canine at the end of my property, it's a different conversation, you know, as opposed to a werewolf. It kind of comes with all this baggage. So, yeah, we're kind of in this point right now where the woo stuff sounds a bit crazy. But, yeah, as we found out, just because it's crazy, it doesn't mean it's not real. At some point, people thought black holes were crazy, and look at us now. We're indirectly taking pictures of the things.
My head immediately goes to Chris Walken on Saturday Night Live, and instead of saying we need more cowbell, we need more cowblood.
What's your impression of Christopher Walken like?
That's on the Patreon feed for anyone on 25. not today, not that one. You've heard you heard me doing a Commander Riker impression before we recorded, so.
Which was wonderful. Yeah,
thank you. Speaking of wonderful, the Calvin photo gets a run out on the documentary as well early on. It wasn't a secret James Fox was doing some boots on the ground work in Calvin, I imagine doing some filming, doing some recording of interviews last year at this point, I think it was now.
That's right.
And are you expecting some more coming out from a Calvin point of view from James?
No, but only because I kind of, you know, I'd speak to people that are still investigating it, and it's gone in certain directions where the stuff isn't going to be publicly talked about for real specific reasons, because it will literally endanger the investigation and possibly somebody. So they're not going to be pushing that much. But like we said, if... We follow this. We know what the Calvin photo is. You say Calvin to a UFO birth, and instantly they know the picture you're talking about. Whereas if I said it to my mum, she'd be like, what? Whereas it is a bona fide picture of a UAP, whether it's man-made or whatever. We don't know what it is. We know that they had 5 or 6 pictures and that there would be movement because there were jets kind of going around it. We know the location that it was at. The witnesses seem to not want to talk to anybody and have kind of disappeared into the wind. It's a really intriguing UFO story. And when that photo came out RAF press officer, Craig Lindsay, who kept a copy, just inadvertently, he kept a copy while sending it to the MOD and newspapers and things like that. I forgot what I was saying.
Craig Lindsay sending stuff to the MOD, the pictures to the MOD. There was 5 or 6 of them, but do you know what it does?
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say it's just really compelling, and the articles that came out said, you know, best UFO picture ever, and yeah, it's an incredible one. It's probably clearer than you know the Nimitz video that we've got, but most people won't know about it. So to package it all in with this and to say, look, there's a there, to use that phrase, it's a really neat piece of the puzzle.
If you're doing a UFO documentary about crash retrieval programs or potential reasons for these being human or non-human objects, then you would have to throw that in there as well. Here's a picture that potentially shows a reverse engineered craft or a craft that was escorted or whatever, or top secret. Yeah. I think it just makes sense to have it there. So I'm not expecting much new on Calvin, but I think it just makes sense kind of having it. There's some interesting footage shown as part of it, just some little clips of kind of UFOs up close, so to speak. There's one, and I can't remember exactly what it is. If you hold the moment, Dan, I'm going to leave the audio here as I speak and just confirm that it is the... it's not that. At 50 seconds in, I thought it was the Chuck Clark footage that we hear so much about, but it's not. And I just
elaborate on that a little bit, just in case someone that's listening doesn't know what the hell Chuck Clark footage.
If you check out any of my or James Fox's interviews he's done where he talks about it, is a video that was sent to UFO researcher Chuck Clark back in the 90s, VHS tape of two guys who are on a bit of a road trip, just filming it on the camcorder, and just happened to on that kind of, I don't think it was Route 66, but that kind of long road, came across this craft that was literally above them. And apparently it's like incredibly compelling stuff where they literally duck under the seats. They're terrified. You see the light going over the top of the car. They kept filming. So the footage is essentially meant to be all that kind of stuff you see in movies and TV shows of an almost abduction type scenario where a saucer is right over the top of a car and it fills the whole car with light. And yeah, and that was what allegedly Logan Paul saw the tape.
And yeah, and filmed it on a
body cam type thing, right? So yeah, I thought it was that, but it's not. So that's the Chuck Clark footage, but it's not a part of the documentary.
That's a shame. That would be cool to be in there. One of the really cool bits of that footage was, I guess if you're on audio, you're not going to see me do it, but supposedly the saucer was kind of bobbing like this, as if it was on a wave, and you could see that movement in the light, the way the shadows were kind of falling. Little details like that, for me, make things compelling as opposed to just, I saw a saucer. You know, it kind of feels, the texture feels right. There are stills of that footage out there, but they're bad quality. And I would love to see it one day. I really would.
Yeah, I think we will. But like you say, it's very degraded, but I still want to see it. It's right up there with anything that could be released that I would want to see.
It can't be worse than what we're used to, right?
No, absolutely not. Whistleblower with voice distortion, Dan. So we see a member of the military, I'm presuming, sitting with that classic camera shot behind, just a kind of side of the head, could be anyone type shot. And their voice is distorted and basically says the American people are being lied to. Great soundbite for a trailer. This is where I think probably a good time to talk about the whistleblower side of things. And what are your expectations? Now, I think what makes a lot of sense, when Representative Tim Burchett says we're going to keep the names of whistleblowers back, or the people speaking at the hearings in November, it makes sense, because once people saw Jason Sands go online and start talking, and then people saw that he was part of this documentary with James Fox, a lot of folks were like, James has to remove him from the documentary, has to take him out. If he's a big part of this, it's going to ruin the documentary. And that's just all opinion. So I can see why they would hold anybody back from an interview perspective that may be testifying. But what are your thoughts then on whistleblowers? Because that is likely to be a big part of what we're seeing.
Yeah, 100%. I expect there will be some more whistleblowers in there. But there were also a few familiar faces in this that were saying things we hadn't heard them say before, that, you know, in some people could make an argument that they were blowing the whistle. So, for example, we saw Hal Putoff of, you know, To the Stars. He goes way back with the Stanford Research Institute and things like that. He literally says, I would go to jail to say the things that I've been exposed to in the program. Heavy implications there that he was part of the program, which he's never said before. So to me, he's kind of blowing the whistle on something there. That's really intriguing. Go on.
So he says, word for word, you are correct. I would go to jail to say things that I've been exposed to in the program. When I discussed that with Nick Gold, Nick was saying it could be like he's willing to go to jail. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's what he's saying.
It could be that, right?
Yeah, but it's not. It's 100%, it's 99% not, right? It's like you say, I think it's that if I said what I know or what I've been exposed to, I would go to jail because it would be treason or whatever that may be, okay? That's almost definitely what he's saying, but it's a very powerful line, and I'm guessing there's context before and after what he said as well.
No doubt, yeah.
It kind of expands it out a little bit. But Hal Putoff being part of that, he is one of those guys that he's such an enigmatic name in the topic that he's sort of out of reach of everything, but the people that do most of the talking. There are a lot of folks I know like this, but also many folk don't like it, how connected he is to so many different aspects of the UFO topic. I've got no issue with that, but I could see why some folks would go, Putoff again. And where other folks are like, Putoff again. So that means something.
And if it turned out that he was part of the program and he's one guy out there that's talking to people about this, then it kind of gives a reason as to why he's connected to all these different people, because he's talking, but behind closed doors, you know, he's talking to people who maybe have similar clearances or have been read on and given the right tickets, as Chris Mellon says. But we also get, as well as, you know, Jason Sands and the guy with the voice changer, we also get someone that we haven't seen kind of talk outwardly too much about it, Senator Kirk McConnell, who he was... has, I'm just going to do a little biography thing, 37 years experience in national security initiatives and quantum computing. There's quantum computing again. He is a professional staff member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, and the Select Committee on U.S. National Security and Military and Commercial Concerns with the People's Republic of China. So this is a guy that's been, for the past few years, in all the meetings as these witnesses were coming forward. You know, we've been told that the Senate has been talking to all the, you know, the 40-odd witnesses that Grush has kind of put forward. This is a guy that would have been in the room with all of those conversations, or so you would think from you know, his CV there. And he's there basically saying, you know, he's asked, so you're telling me people have come forward claiming firsthand knowledge of craft of non-human origin. And he says, and I'm not going to quote, I'm just going to paraphrase, that he absolutely has firsthand witnesses that are asserting that there haven't only been crashes, but also crash retrievals. Again, it's kind of a he said, she said thing. But like I said, this is a guy that's been in the room to hear these conversations. So there's weight that comes with that. And now I think how many people on those committees now we heard say there's something to this. This isn't just hot air. And we still have people kind of trying to convince others that there's nothing to this this whole conversation. These are the right people to be listening to. These are the people with the tickets, the keys to the rooms, the ones that have been in the meetings. And it was really nice to see him in this trailer. I want to hear more from him.
Yeah, James Fox does clear up regarding Jason Sands. He was on American Alchemy with Jesse Michaels. It's like a 3-hour conversation. He does say that regarding James Sands' account, he chose to report on it and keep it in the documentary, but he can't prove it happened. So I think that's important. And fair play to James to say, I can't prove this happened, you know, but the report's there. And he did, he is who he says he is. So I'm reporting the testimony. And, sure. You know, that's totally fair. There are so many ways that the David Grush situation could have been handled badly when he first came out that people would have probably downplayed the whole David Grush scenario that eventually did happen.
To jump in there, I remember when Grush did come out, a journalist tried to attack him, a journalist from The Intercept, Ken Klippenstein, and he was directed to a bunch of medical records that suggested Grush has PTSD, which Grush openly spoke about when he came out, but it was kind of played up as an attack. And Ken Klippenstein was recently kicked off of Twitter or X for leaking some information that he shouldn't have, that had JD Vance's home address and things like that in it. Sure, you know, you can look up those addresses, but that's not okay. You're doxing the people. Real interesting. Clearly has connections to get documents that he shouldn't be getting. Sorry to interrupt there.
No, that's all right. And ultimately, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with the trailer. I'm looking forward to it. Was there anything else in there that you wanted to touch on?
What did you think of the appearance? I was surprised to see Gary McKinnon in there. Just because that's like very 90s, it feels like a different caliber of conversation.
I suppose it's still an example of a whistleblower. Like, you know, like here's, and what he said was pretty spectacular at the time. Gary McKinnon, folks who basically hacked NASA's systems and came out and said he saw proof of alien life and, you know, extraterrestrial civilizations and all this kind of stuff stored on NASA's systems in various places. That's essentially it, isn't it, Dan? Like,
I think there was one particular file just to expand on the hacking thing, someone had left a computer connected to a network. It wasn't password protected and he remote desktoped into it. So in the 90s, that would have been difficult to do. There weren't programs to do it as simply as there is today, where, you know, you bring your iPhone or your Mac and it just, you can jump across those.
Is that
screens.
Like Jurassic Park when the girl was like a hacker and she's like, open main grid, open main gate, open this. And it's like, oh my God, you're a hacker. And it's like, she's just.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So to you know, to someone that knows that stuff, it would have been, that's not hacking. But he got into a system he wasn't meant to get into. And he saw a picture that didn't fully load. He was kicked off before it fully loaded, but it was a ship above the Earth that was on the desktop. I've heard that argued as maybe it was a honeypot, maybe it's just something that's there because you know that if someone hacks it and finds that, they're not going to keep their mouth shut about it, so they kind of flag themselves up for security review. But yeah, he never took a screenshot. I guess computers were slower and his jaw was probably on the floor kind of as it loaded.
We all remember the 90s and try to download pictures of anything. Bit at a time as it kind of went along. Again, Calvin, Gary McKinnon, I think Bob Lazar would have to be included within it. You know, not maybe new stuff, but I'm guessing you have to bring up that story. Because if you are telling the story of UFO crash retrievals and the programs around back engineering them, whatever that's going to entail, those are all main elements of the story that have to be told. And I think the way James will present those types of things will be fair. It won't be Bob Lazar done this and it won't be Gary McKinnon done this. It's like, here are stories that have been a big part of this lore. And it's up to the viewer watching it to kind of make up their mind how much to buy into those elements of it, which is always the way you should do those things, in my opinion. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, to see that picture painted that, you know, with this smoke, this fire, usually, you know, there's just a lot of smoking in this instance. To see all that put together with a question mark over it, and then to hear Colonel Carl Nell from the SALT conference, that clip, non-human intelligence exists, you know, very pointed. Very straight-faced, again, super qualified guy. That's going to be impactful, especially if you haven't been in this day today. You know, you're going to be like, what? What's going on? Kind of similar to people seeing Lou on The Daily Show.
Yeah. But generally, looking forward to the documentary, Dan?
Very much so. I'll be watching it the first moment that I possibly can. Love James's work, and yeah, he deserves major props, and I really hope they get it on a good network, just because, yeah, especially because he was screwed over with the previous distribution companies.
Yeah, absolutely. I've said to him, like, for the month that comes out, I'm happy to lead the show with, make sure you've watched the program, folks. I mean, I say that, like, can you imagine it was awful or something? And I was like, oh, no, I can't do that. No, it won't be, because anything James puts out, a lot of work, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears goes into these things, so
yeah.
Dan, it's the 7th of October as we're recording this right now, just so folks listening to it in the next couple of weeks can date this. But do you know what day it is on the 20th of October, Dan?
What day or what date?
Well,
I'm guessing it's an anniversary. I want to be a smart ass and say it's the 20th, but go on.
It's the first Global Disclosure Day. So this is headed up by the New Paradigm Institute. That's my segue, folks, onto this. So a little bit of information. If you go to newparadigminstitute.org, I'll put the link in the description, but there's a little video to accompany this as well. So it says, on this day, our Citizens for Disclosure groups in 43 states and around the world will convene watch parties for a two-hour live stream event. I'll just go on to read. This first-of-its-kind event will feature notable speakers in the disclosure movement, testimonials from local activist groups, and special videos about the latest information on UAP. We are witnessing a major sea change in the history of the UFO-UAP campaign. Up until very recently, the onus was on the movement to prove UFOs were real. Now, so much information has come out at such high levels of the US government that the burden is now on those who tried to keep UFOs a secret to prove that they are not real. We are in a new time. And then it gives you a form on the right-hand side just to ask for information to send out, and you can host your own watch party and stuff like that as well. It seems to be running 1 p.m. Eastern or 7 p.m. Central European time. Interesting to see that side by side. But yeah, Global Disclosure Day, Dan. It'll get some eyes. I don't know how much it'll pull in folk from the outside of the UFO community a couple of weeks ahead of the hearings. But yeah, who knows? I mean, it can't be a bad thing as long as it's done well and tastefully.
Yeah, absolutely. We need more events like this that, like you say, are tasteful, keep the bar high. And, you know, we're not just trotting out the same crap as they trotted out in the 80s and 90s with the X-Files music and things. The conversation has changed, and so many people now are looking for spaces where they can listen in and have these conversations. And I've heard from countless academics that are like, yeah, I kind of hover about on social networks, but I'm never, ever going to interact with this, with anyone talking about this stuff. These are people, places for those people to go to get more information and to clear this muddy water and to really focus and zero in on who they should be listening to, what they should be listening to. So yeah, I'm hoping for some really cool speakers. You know, Danny Sheehan's a heavy hitter in this subject and has access to a lot of really great people. So very curious to see who shows up on that day. I'll be watching.
And the New Paradigm Institute also, Dan, today on X/Twitter, do you feel in modern day, we've got so many acronyms, but you end up just saying both of them anyway, or like names for stuff. So like WWE and WWF, you've got Twitter and X, we've got UFO and UAP, you still end up saying the same thing. It's like, for Christ's
sake. WWW makes me laugh because, you know what, that's like 9 syllables. And World Wide Web is 3. So I'm like, it's not shorter. It's not even, it doesn't help. But,
true.
You know, my mum would be typing in World Wide Web dot if we said World Wide Web.
So New Paradigm Institute, folks, they have basically put on their online socials. The New Paradigm Institute has curated a collection of digitized motion pictures from the National Archives and Records Administration related to UFOs and UAP, now available viewing on our YouTube channel. Rather than navigating through NARA's extensive bulk download page, they're organized and ready for immediate playback. I know we've not looked at them properly, Dan, but I did have a quick look at the playlist and it looks really easy to use, folks. And there are loads of very short clips, but also longer interviews with folks from, there's clips from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and it's folks involved in military, various programs. There are very short UFO videos of lights in the sky. So yeah, that seems like a pretty handy, easy thing to read through and jump through. I think that'll be something worth kind of having a browse at, Dan, over the next couple of days.
Yeah, 100%. We need more on-ramps like that. You know, you can go to the National Archive website and you can look through hundreds and thousands of pages of documents about the UFO issue since the 40s. But who wants to do that, right? No one reads these days. These are really concise videos that you kind of get the main points and, you know, a little insight into that kind of stuff. The UK National Archive did a similar thing with Dr. David Clark, who actually was the guy who found the Calvin photo.
Yep.
So yeah, you can go to the UK National Archive website and kind of look at some of those. And it's essentially a guide through, you know, for the people who don't have the time to sit down and read thousands of these pages and to make the connections and so on and so forth. It's really great. And this is actually not the videos on the New Paradigm Institute, but the documents themselves going to the National Archives are the result of the NDAA UAP language that was passed last year, where all these different organizations by law have to be given all of their UFO stuff to the National Archives now for public kind of for public access. And yeah, it's great to see that happening, and it's great to see the New Paradigm Institute helping people digest all that.
Did you have some notes, Dan, on the Cliff Sims comments you wanted to touch on?
Yeah, really interesting, right? Cliff Sims was a former DDNI, it's an acronym again, so I'm going to say the other thing as well, you just said, Deputy Director of National Intelligence. He was on the team there, so, you know, really high up, and he was on a show where he was talking about, it was Sean Ryan's podcast, right? And he was talking about people at the ODNI trying to receive the briefing on UFOs from the people that were given it, which I guess would have been Arrow and, you know, the UAPTF during that time. And he was saying that basically everyone there was, except like the tippy top of the food chain, was kicked out of the room. And the only people that were there were, yeah, the heads of the ODNI. And he was emphasizing that the ODNI as a group were people who have access to, you know, they're briefing the president, so they have access to the super sensitive stuff on a daily basis to do their jobs. And they weren't allowed to be in the room during that UFO briefing. So he was making the point that the people doing the briefing were very, very sensitive about who has access to these programs. Tim McMillan followed up and kind of said that it wasn't a big deal. And then Douglas Dean Johnson swung in and said, you know, not so quick. And basically, they came down, Tim McMillan being a journalist at the wonderful debrief, by the way. And Douglas Dean Johnson has a past in lobbying on the Hill, so he kind of knows the inner workings of all that. And they came to an agreement that it's just another one of these kind of bullet points and flags that show that this is being taken seriously inside the halls of Congress and in the administration. For all of the people saying there's nothing there, there are these really highly classified meetings going on, really sensitive meetings going on, and you're not allowed to just be in the room to go, ha, 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 I'm on a UFO briefing. This is a national security issue that's being taken seriously by all of the people that take national security, you know, against adversaries like China and Russia and so on and so forth. It's on that level. And yet it's not being discussed kind of publicly, openly on that level. So there's a big kind of question mark as to why they're not being transparent about this if there's nothing to it. Yet again, I can see you watching The Fly. It's back. Some non-human intelligence is annoying.
This is the sequel to the Fly Who Was There Before, folks. It's literally a shed I record in, and it is not like sealed or waterproof or watertight by any means. So,
in news aside from that, just staying on subject with the fly that's attacking you, researchers over the past couple of weeks came out, and there's an amazing website on it. They actually imaged a fly's brain and kind of managed to look at every single connection inside a fly's brain. So imagine how small a fly is. They've looked at how it works, basically. They have a picture of the inner workings, and we don't even have that with our minds yet. And the researchers are saying that they think we're about 30 or 40 years away from being able to look at the human mind and know what everything's for and how it's communicating, so on and so forth, which I've always maintained stuff like that is it's overlapping with the kind of conversations we have here about UFOs and UAP. Consciousness comes into it. What is consciousness? With flies, they're closer than ever to figuring that out. And, you know, today flies, tomorrow humans. So, yeah, it's really cool to see them advancing on that front.
There we have it. Dan says flies are aliens. That's why I assert from that. So a lot of listener questions to get through, folks. So for some of you, this might split into two episodes because there's loads to get through. Thank you to everyone who sent stuff in. We'll kick off, Dan, with some questions around the program, just to kind of follow up on some of those aspects.
Which program?
Well, the program, the documentary by James Fox. Very right to clear me up on that one. But so Kirk asks, where will we be able to see the program? So yeah, just to clarify again, right now there is nowhere that is confirmed to show it, and that's as of 7:10 UK time on the 7th of October. I've seen people sharing online, Dan, and I know we've kind of mentioned this before, but I want to bring it up again, saying, oh, Plex has a listing for it, or Apple TV has a listing for it. Or no, until James Fox tells you where it's going to be, I don't think he's even signed the deal, unless it happened today at this point, for it to be streamed anywhere. So whatever people are posting, when James Fox posts where it's going to be and what it's going to be, much like when we kept seeing dates for Lou Elizondo's book, and they changed on a monthly basis, just because people put placeholders up, there was no release date until we saw the release date. So that's it, folks. So there's nowhere yet to be able to see it, but we'll kind of find out soon enough. If you had to guess, Dan, when we were going to see it, where would you think?
I want to see it sooner rather than later, so I'm hoping for a pre-holiday release, and I expect James is eager to make that too.
I'm going to guess the end of November.
Okay, so we're in the same ballpark, really.
Yeah. End of November. Yeah. If not, I wonder, is it January?
Yeah, if it doesn't make Christmas, it's going to still come out sooner rather than later, isn't it?
Yeah.
James has been insistent on that.
Question from Fred, and Fred, I know Fred is particularly skeptical at times on these things, but always a welcome chatter over on Patreon or on the Discord. Fred says, odd that James Fox releases a trailer without any confirmed distribution. Given the success of his other well-produced documentaries, one would expect there would be many interested parties to release the program. What's really going on here? Do you want to lead on that one, Dan? Or
I mean, this is one of those things where you can look into it too much, I think. James is eager to get it out. He's been teasing this trailer coming and the release and the movie and everything coming real soon. So I think James was just eager to get it out. And it seems like he had a contact at Screen Rant that was able to host and put an article up, you know, in the trades. Deadline had it up too. And with this kind of stuff, when you're selling movies, it's better to have, you know, if I walk into a room and I say, I have a movie, is one thing. If I walk into a room and I say, I have a movie and the trailer's had a million views, that's a great thing to be able to say when you're selling something, that there's interest there, that the investors are going to get the money back if they pay you for the film to distribute it. So I kind of see it as James, you know, trying to wet the investors' whistle a little bit, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think, again, success is relative, because going to Netflix, who I imagine are pitched 100 documentaries every single day, regardless of the credibility of the documentary maker. And I think for a lot of folks, James Fox is the documentary maker in the UFO circle and has been for a long time. To go to Netflix, maybe Netflix offered him, and this is literally me making up numbers, right? Like, okay, we'll give you like $100,000 for your documentary.
You heard it here first.
But then we saw the trailer cost him $25,000. Yep. So let's just say the making of the documentary cost him $30,000 to $50,000. So already he's down, what, $70,000, $75,000, or investors are down that, or however he's financed it. I don't know, right? But then he maybe, you go, oh, wow, they're giving him $100,000. What, he's making $20,000 for his whole documentary that's took him like how many years and all that work and effort? And it's like, well, actually, but to Netflix, maybe that's what it's worth. Maybe there's add-ons depending on streams and all that kind of stuff, but there's no real guarantees. So I think it's easy to be like, well, that one went really well. Why isn't this one? I think there's plenty of... Dan, we were just talking about The Joker 2.
Yeah, that's right.
And how massive the first one was and how the second one is bombed. No spoilers or anything, or we won't talk about the movie. But just off the back of the first one, the second one's not seeing that same success.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the first one made over $1 billion and the second one is making less money than Mobius, I read.
Yeah. And that's not that the program won't be fantastic, by the way. The program, I am happy to put money on, will be very, very good. But yes, I don't think there's a guarantee with these things. So James is quite right to do his due diligence and make sure that he's getting the best deal for himself, his family, but also for his work, and that that's protected as well, that he can take that elsewhere if he wants to, and he does own the content and all that kind of stuff as well. So it could be that some of the bigger streamers want full ownership of the content as well, and that's not something James is willing to do. I would just hope, however and when it does come out, if there is a paid option for it, that folks go and buy the documentary and they, you know, they give up the $10, $20, $30, whatever it is, or pounds, to help support, you know, kind of one of our own as such in the community doing that kind of work. So I think we'll find out. I don't think there's anything to it, Fred, in that respect.
I'd way prefer, if I'm given the option of watching it on Netflix via, you know, the monthly money that I'm paying, the subscription, versus giving James $20 directly through his own website, I'm definitely going to go to his website and pay James directly, because I know he gets to keep all of that then, versus whatever Netflix is giving him. You know, what's a stream worth these days?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I don't think there's too much to it, but Fred's got another question coming up later on. Kate says, Dan, the trailer for the program seems like it's going to be more of the same. It feels like many shows are just rehashing the same info over and over. What are your hopes and expectations for it? Do you think it's likely those already well versed in the subject will learn anything new? When do you think documentary makers like Fox will be ready to approach the more woo side of the phenomenon? So for my three answers, Dan, what are my hopes and expectations? I think I've said pretty high, and I expect there will be new information. Yes, and that's not from a place of, it's just a gut feeling. I think we're going to get some new stuff in this. If the phenomenon was a wonderful summary of everything that's been and kind of where we're at, I think the program really drills down into a niche. I think we might get, and I'm all for this, a little bit more speculation in the program, just given the very nature of what it's talking about and crash retrievals and that kind of real murky black budget world. And when do I think documentary makers like Fox will be ready to approach the more woo side of the phenomenon? I think James has done that in the past and he's not scared to. I think it's a fine line to tread, and we've talked about this before, haven't we, Dan, about what's too much and when do you go from what is essentially a nuts and bolts crash retrieval program to experiencers? Is that something you do just leave out of something like this?
Yeah, absolutely. James is going to be approaching this in a really conscientious manner. Like, he's not just going to be throwing everything down, you know, because abductee stories go, or contact stories go, everywhere from, you know, Betty and Barney Hill, where it was fairly straightforward, you know, as the abductions, we kind of, a typical abduction goes. I say typical abduction,
your box on Tuesday night abduction.
Yeah. But then they go all the way to Joe Simonton being given pancakes by the aliens and having a little exchange, and it just gets a bit too crazy for people, you know, all the way to hybrids then and those discussions. I feel like this is going to be a more grounded kind of affair, for people who are interested in the approach that the phenomenon took, you know, even for some of those people, you could hear them having trouble talking about Moment of Contact and the Virginia case,
yeah,
with the alien kind of running around like that. That was even over some people's red lines. So yeah, James is going to appeal to the masses with this one. It's a puzzle piece. It's not the be all and end all. But I agree, it's going to be drilling down into its namesake, the program, referring to the legacy program that's been running for, you know, God knows how long now. 900 years at this point, right? Mm. And yeah, it's going to be inspiration for the public to ask, WTF is going on? You know, well, tell us what's going on. There seems to be something here. A lot of people are saying there's something here. I'm hoping for compelling first-hand witnesses. That's, I guess, the one thing that the Hal quote that I brought up earlier kind of alludes to, that he seems to be a first-hand witness to this program and to working in this program. I don't want to see just Hal. I want to see more. And I think that will really set some fire under some butts if that's included.
A few other questions were on a similar vein, Dan, but I think a nice way to wrap up part one, which largely focuses on the program, the documentary, and the listener questions part of that, is around the idea that a lot of folks seem, maybe, I don't know if the word's worried or concerned, but a lot of this content, is it going to be for the UFO community, or is it going to be for an audience that doesn't know it, but all the UFO community knows this already? And I think there's a kind of line that must be difficult to traverse on that. But do you not think we are at a point where, given what's happened the last 5-6 years, 2017's what's 5-6-7 years, okay? There is a space for documentaries, books, movies, just media in general, to catch people up from a new place where we're no longer going back to Roswell. You know, we're not going back to Betty and Barney Hill necessarily. I know there's a Netflix documentary coming out, isn't there? The Obama.
Sure, yeah.
But there is something to say, actually, let's look at the UFO topic from 2017. I think if you're trying to capture a public, and I mean a true worldwide imagination now, I think there's a lot of stuff to go right. Here's some new books, here's some new movies, here's some, and I'm thinking of like Spielberg's new E.T. movie, where, yep, yeah, you can go back and go, oh, watch Close Encounters, watch E.T. A lot of folks that are younger don't want to watch Close Encounters or watch E.T. They don't want to go and watch documentaries from 20, 30, 40 years ago, 10 years ago. Stuff looks old to them. So let's give, yep, them some new material, some new stuff. And do you know what? Some of us in the UFO community just have to accept and understand that, Dan, both of us are nearly 40. So, you know, we're middle-aged.
Oh, God. Time flies.
Terrifying, right? But there are going to be a whole load of folks coming through to this topic who are young and naive to it and unsure, and their exposure to it is Stephen Greer on Joe Rogan and, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, that's their on-ramp. But do you know what? For a lot of folks that are involved in this now for 20, 30, 40 years, their on-ramp was a cheesy newsletter or a VHS of the alien, you know, autopsy from the 90s. So
yeah,
that was people's on-ramps back then. And then look how far those people have had to come to get to this point. So I've got no issue with this bringing in an audience or being for people newer to the subject, but I just think the nuance of talking about a crash retrieval program lends itself to there will be new information, and especially with a Hal Puthoff who doesn't do a whole lot of talking.
No,
you know, Hal's not on the podcast circuit, for example, which is frustrating, but hey ho, you know, it's rare that he goes and does these kind of things, so when he talks, people listen. And I'm expecting quite a lot from it, so yeah, is that fair? Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you just said. Yeah, I'm, and that's exactly why I'm excited to hear Hal talk, because, yeah, you hear conversations about him, but you don't hear him talk often. Or he does that, there was a great, I think it was Jesse Michaels, American Alchemy, where he was talking with Eric Weinstein, and just about physics and so on and so forth. And a lot of people not knowing who Hal is would watch that and go, who the hell am I listening to? Why is this guy important? And things like this upcoming documentary, can, you know, let everybody know how important Hal was, and in Hal's own words too. So I'm really excited to see him in there. I've said time and time again now that he should be on the stand. You know, I'd love to see him testify and to kind of spill the beans, even if it was in a skiff afterwards, to the armed services committees and so on and so forth. But wouldn't surprise me if he's done that already. So yeah, really great to see him talking to the public here.
I'm going to hand over the final word, Dan, to one of the long-time listeners and supporters of the podcast, Gnosis, who I think had a nice little paragraph. So if you're listening to this, folks, part two will be more listener questions, but focusing on a load of other aspects of the conversation. We'll kind of wrap up the programme side of things here. But Gnosis says, since Arrow were formed, all signs point to a DoD strategy where you admit to a phenomenon, commit to declassifying a few orb sightings and propose to establish a scientific investigation, basically to start again on the topic from scratch. What I hope the programme does is show the public that this was a misdirection and that there is a very real chance this was an attempt to bury the history of this topic and continue the cover-up of material acquisition. I hope this is the fuel that fires up Congress, not just asking for better reporting on current UAP events under the guise of air safety, but to uncover something much darker that has been hidden from view and taxpayer transparency. Congress could solve this tomorrow, but they can't just rely on volunteers to come forward. At some point, they have to call on the US Air Force, the Department of Energy, and CIA insiders. That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full, ad-free and with no sponsors for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V26 Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Visit Lowe's and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.